just about a minute after 8 o'clock, a Monday edition of the Mornings with Ed show. And if I sound a tiny bit out of breath, I was just running now to get George some water here. We welcome onto the Artist Corner this morning. We've had him on before. He's one of my favorite conversations to have about multiple subjects. And that's what you got to love about this guy. George Dubin in with us. Hi, George.
Hey, thanks for having me, Ed.
Thanks for coming in today. How are you today?
Well, I'm a little weary. I spent a fun weekend up in Joshua Tree over this weekend and got up this morning and kind of leisurely walking around and checked my text message and realized I had to be here. So I hauled ass over here and here I am. So thanks for having me.
Well, thank you for coming. I appreciate that. And you know, Joshua Tree, it lingers with you when you leave Joshua Tree in that area and the beauty that's with it. It lingers with you. So I can guess you still had some Joshua Tree in
it. Yeah. So anyways, my apologies if I was a little late.
Oh, no. Yeah, you were fine. You're good. You're good, man. You're totally good. So the inspiration that you get from a place like Joshua Tree, what does that do for you? Is that a cleansing experience?
Well, it's such a different environment than, you know, our beach community, and it's got its own kind of beauty and serenity and definitely inspiration in terms of, you know, creative people. There's a lot of artists up there who have, you know, found a place that not only inspires them but they can afford.
Right.
So I mean, it's gotten less that way, but it's still, you know, it's still got its kind of unique charm, and just there's something kind of spiritual about it, I guess.
Right. Did you find anything that you brought back with you? Was there a moment you thought, yeah, I can do something with this? I always want to dig into what you're thinking about art-wise.
The place I stayed, it inspired me to want to, you know, donate some sculptures for it, you know, because it's a nice property and it's an art related kind of thing, and I just thought, well, I want to contribute to this environment, you know. Right. That's sort of what it does for me.
You are a giver, man. You're a giver. Well, dude, I'm telling you.
You know, a friend of mine called me and said, hey, I've got this great project. It's a kind of a one off take on a Monopoly board, and I thought it would be right up your alley because it's going to be, you know, potentially a lot of work and no money. And I said, well, that's my business model.
Work hard, but at least there's no money.
Yeah. You know. But, you know, those kinds of things, you know, because they're creative and they're unique and they're interesting and in his case, it's for a good cause.
Right.
You know, it's like, it's not always about making money, you know. For me, it isn't, you know. Unfortunately, I've lived modestly my whole life, so right. I've, you know, saved when I've done okay, and so I can take on things like that, and it doesn't, you know, it's not the end of the world, you know, and plus it's, you know, it's like I say, it's for a good cause, you know.
Right. Yeah. We grew up poor. My family, we grew up poor. Yeah. We used to sit around and watch each other get skinny. But I get growing up modestly. I really, really do.
Who gets the crust and who gets the other part of the bread? Right.
Yeah. So I get living modestly as an adult. I can definitely.
Well, I always knew because, you know, I've been an artist all my life, you know, and so you gotta, you know, when the good times are there, you take it all in and then understand that there may be 3 or 4 months or longer where there's no income.
Right.
So you gotta can't live beyond your means.
Right. I want to talk about a piece of yours that it's fascinating. It's 60 feet tall, right?
Yeah, yes.
Dude, it's Mercury Falling.
Yes.
And it's in Irvine. Tell us about it.
Yeah. Well, it's the project started 5 years ago.
Right.
And it was a friend of mine, a good friend of mine, who's also been very supportive of not only myself, but a lot of artists in Laguna Beach. He and his company redeveloped a piece of property they had that's at Main and Jamboree in Irvine. Excuse me. And they are built a 388-unit apartment complex, and they wanted the architecture to look different than all the other, cookie-cutter apartment complexes that are all over that area. And one of the features of it is they wanted to do a landmark sculpture for it to really set it apart from everything else and make it super unique. And so he reached out to me and said, "Hey, would you be interested in doing a piece?" And I said, "Well, yeah. I mean, that's a very cool opportunity right. for any artist, you know, to be able to do that." And the initial concept was that it was just going to be on the rooftop. It was right. just going to be a smaller piece on the rooftop that sort of made people go, "Wow, what's that?" But right. The more I got into the design iteration part of the project, it grew and grew and grew until all of a sudden it's five stories high, you know? So, and so it was, it looks like pooling mercury on the rooftop
right.
and it's spilling over the edge and streaming all the way down to the ground. And when it hits the ground, there's a big splash, and it's made out of, mirror polished stainless steel, so it reflects.
It looks like mercury.
It looks like mercury.
It looks exactly like mercury.
But part of the concept too was that the building architecture is kind of angular and hard edged, so to speak, and they wanted something that would kind of soften that look and bring a little of nature and a little organic quality to that corner of the building, which is right on Main and Jamboree. It's the main corner of the building. And so this kind of does that because it's so reflective. It reflects the sky. It reflects nature all around it, you know. So it's sort of softened the hard edge look of that. And it was sort of a feng shui thing too, you know.
Right.
So 5 years later, 2 weekends ago, it finally got installed. There was some delays with the building construction and then some delays with the actually, I had finished the sculpture in 2018, so it's been stored
okay.
for almost 4 years, and finally, after you know getting approvals from the city, and you know they had to get lane closures to bring in the equipment to install the piece.
It's one solid piece. It's one piece.
It's all 60 one piece. Feet? Wow. They brought it on a flatbed, right. a 60-foot flatbed truck, and there was two cranes. To put it into place, and it was an all day operation, and I was was watching this crew do the work, and man, they really knew what they were doing. They had all the bases covered and contingencies plans in case something happened, and it went in really smoothly, and it looks great. I mean, it's way beyond my expectations, you know.
So during the course of making this, and obviously you have an amazing imagination to have come up with this to begin with, but did you attach fasteners to it? Were you cognizant of this needs to be fastened, and this is where the fastening happens?
Yeah, so the original engineer, structural engineer that I had to work with was a young guy, and he had all these attachment points like midway on the sculpture and all right. that connected to the building. I said, no. It can be connected at the top and the bottom, but it's got to be free. It's got to look like it's actually spilling off the, and any kind of midpoint connection would ruin that look, you know. So
right.
it had to get re-engineered. And so there, it's affixed at the bottom, obviously. And then on the rooftop, there's a couple of extension arms that come off the back of it that are mounted to the roof structure. So it took, I think, two or three structural engineers to sign off on it finally, and then right. to get the city to stamp the approval. And you know, it was one of the interesting things about public art is that you know artists who have no experience doing it. They see these budgets and they think, oh wow, this is going to be amazing, you know. And then they design something and they get into these things, and often discover that there is no profit,
right?
Or they've exceeded the budget because they don't have the ability to fabricate things themselves, so they have to go to a sculpture fabrication studio. And right. next thing you know, the money that you thought was going to be great turns into like. The project could be a nightmare because of you know all the other behind the scenes stuff that you don't even know about, you know, if you're not experienced with doing public art. So, right. So it's a kind of a labor of love for a lot of those things. And this particular project, you know, I knew there wasn't going to be a big chunk of money at the end, but it's kind of a legacy piece for me too, to have a 60-foot sculpture. It's not in Laguna, obviously, but it's in the county that I've lived in for most of my adult life,
So. Right. Well, we do have some fantastic work of yours in Laguna. So I think we're covered for a little bit here.
Yeah. Well,
where did the making of this take place? Obviously not in a studio apartment here on the canyon or anything. No. Where exactly did you do this?
So, normally with my, cause I've done about 10 other public art, sculptures, installations. I can do all the fabrication myself, but obviously this one being on this scale and because of the material and the organic shapes that are involved in it, I did check around the States. There are sculpture studios that do fabrication for artists. Okay. And when I told them what the budget was, they either hung up the phone or or said, well, you come back when you have another $500,000 we'll talk about it. So I was kind of stuck for a little while. So I started just reaching out into the world, basically, and found a reputable sculpture manufacturing studio in China. So that's where it was fabricated.
Okay.
And then it was shipped over, and it had been basically stored at 3 different locations over the last 4 years before it finally got installed. So,
So you had to go somewhere else. There was nothing available here in the United States that was affordable.
Right. And it's the contrast between, the labor market here, which, whatever anybody charges is what they charge. And I never argue with that because... Right. I don't want people doing that to me either. So when I just couldn't find, a location in the States, which was unfortunate because I would have preferred that. So I found this company in China and they're amazing. I mean, they're old school. They've been around for, who knows how long.
Right.
They do not only stainless steel fabrication, but they have a huge foundry as well. And again, the labor market there is different than it is here.
And I
had 2 trips over there. It was in Hangzhou, China, which is southwest of Shanghai, still a coastal community.
Right.
I was going there when I got there, I thought, I'm going to see, pneumatic tools and all kinds of modern presses and various things. And it was really astonishing to see how they actually fabricated this piece.
Mostly by hand?
All by hand.
Wow.
Sandbags on the ground, guys with mallets hammering out, sections of stainless steel until they got it to fit properly on the form. They make a full-scale, high-density foam model of it, and then they use that as the pattern to form the metal around that. So it was really fascinating. They said they had about 50 people working on it.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
And they fabricated the whole thing in about 4 months. And it's it blew my mind. I mean, it was just.
It's a mind blowing piece. I would suggest people. Where can people see it?
Okay, if you go from here out to the 405,
right?
Go north to Jamboree, and when you turn on Jamboree, you'll go. I guess it's north. Go towards the hills.
Right.
And the first intersection there is Main Street. It's a big, huge intersection, and it's right on that corner of on the west side, west corner of Main and Jamboree on the building there. And it's the Skyloft Apartments is what it's called.
And you have to see it with your own eyes because seeing it on social media or on your phone, it's not the same.
No,
it's not the same as seeing it in person. It's really, really cool.
Yeah, it's one thing to look at a little picture of it, but when you're really up next to it or even driving by it, it's definitely a landmark.
Right.
Which was the intent, I think, the owners of the project wanted it to be something that, people like really caught their eye and went, wow, that's unheard of in Irvine.
Whenever I see a work of art, I say to myself, wow, this needs to be bigger.
Yeah. Well, it's the biggest piece I've ever done. So
do you see yourself, is this something you could do again or something similar? Would you do a large, enormous piece like this again?
Oh, I'd love to. I mean, there's a lot of pieces to a puzzle like that, but, you know, having pulled this one off and done it, you know, in the timeline I was given, even though that got delayed by 4 years.
Right.
I would absolutely do it again, because it's a really interesting process, to not only from the conceptual end of it, or and then finalizing a design, but, you know, working through all the various not only people, the engineering, the installation, the, you know, it's a lot to track. I mean, I've got 4 folders full of, you know, paper and, you know, various, you know, design iteration things and engineering drawings, and, you know, it's and a lot of stuff you have to work with other people to do something on that scale. It's not a one person operation. You know, so
I don't want to embarrass you or anything, but whenever I talk to anyone in town or anyone about you, period, you've got cred. You really do. You have cred, man, and that's important to carry. And for
I've always believed, you know, as you know, because I, you know, a lot of my friends are artists, obviously, and I know a lot of, you know, just peripherally, and know a lot of artists as well, and you know, a lot of artists have a reputation, and I think not just visual artists, I think it's all creatives, as sort of being, you know, not super reliable, and you know, can be, and you know, I mean, I look at myself this morning, I'm never the guy who's late, and here I'm rushing down Coast Highway to get to the show here, but.
Well, that was because you were at Joshua Tree. You weren't up drinking all night till 4 in the morning. You know, you were doing something reasonable.
Well, but anyways, you know, I've always wanted to be the guy who, you know, was reliable, and you know, right. If I said I was going to do something, I'd got it done, and right. You know, and it's important to me, for you know, regardless of what people think of me from the outside looking in.
Right.
I've always wanted to be, you know, regardless of my beliefs or views on things, that you can't find a flaw in terms of my reliability and doing what I say I'm going to do, you know. Right. So
have you found that people have made unfair judgments about you because of simply your art? They've seen some of your art and they've made unfair judgments
on that? I think people looking in from the outside who don't know me,
right,
and they only know whether it's my paintings or whatever, or some of the other things that I do, they form a really interesting judgment of who I am. And then when they get to know me, they're like, wow, I had no idea.
Right.
You know? So, and that's kind of interesting to me in a way, because, you know, I don't mind that. It doesn't bother me, if somebody takes the time to get under the surface a little bit, they'll see something different in
there, right. You know. Right. So. And it is funny that you're gifted at a lot of things. A former neighbor of mine, when I mentioned your name to him, he goes, "Oh, the drummer."
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that too. Yeah.
You get so, that. That's cool.
Yeah. So that's another kind of sideline thing for me.
Right. Yeah. So what's happening Saturday?
So a couple of months ago, my good friend and fellow artist, who's also in the complex where I am in the canyon, came up with this idea of, like, you know, there's a lot of us in town who are either underrepresented or have no representation here in Laguna Beach, or really anywhere for that matter. And he said, why don't we take charge of our, you know, visual expressions and show the town a little different side of Laguna Beach. And he came up with this idea of, like, why don't, you know, because in the complex I'm in, I think there's 6 or 7 artists in there. And then we invited, I think, 3 other artists from outside that are friends of ours, and said, why don't we have an event? And it's not just, he said, listen, I don't want it to just be kind of a staid, it's artists and their studios are open and you can come look at art, you know. Right. Let's make it a fun event, you know, that is not only opens our world up to people who may not understand that there are other things going on in Laguna besides the art festivals and the galleries and the museum that might be interesting, but let's make it fun. So we're having a couple of bands, local bands here.
Very cool.
We're having, you know, a taco vendor. We're having some yard games. We're, just trying to make it like, hey, this is a fun thing, a cool thing to come see. And there's art involved in it too, you know. Right. But I didn't, none of us wanted to make it feel like, if you come to this thing, you're kind of, you know, you can have your cheap glass of wine and, hopefully buy a piece of art or something like that. It's not an art garage sale either. It's serious artists doing work that is either not exposed or underexposed here in town. So, you know, it's just a way of, artists a lot now need to take charge of their careers in terms of how to market their work. We all kind of, at least I used to be like the old school, like you get with a gallery and they really do all the hard, heavy lifting in terms of getting your work out in the world. Well, that model is kind of over. Right. And so with the advent, of course, of, all the different ways of getting work out there through social media and other things that, artists are starting to take a lot more charge of their career in terms of how they market their work, and it's important for everybody to do that because it's so difficult to get representation. I mean, I don't have any in Laguna Beach, and I've been here 47 years. I mean, I was with Peter Blake for 18 years, and we had a great working relationship, and I was really happy to be there. And I know he always was very focused on minimal abstraction. That was really sort of his sweet spot. And so, that our relationship ended, and I did reach out to a few other local dealers in town, and they just look at my work and go, no thanks. I don't have clients for that, and I get it. I don't hold anything against them, but I tried last year just out of curiosity. I actually submitted for the Festival of Arts and got summarily rejected from that.
So was it a big red stamp that said no?
It wasn't even that cool. So the event is it's next Saturday. It's 4 to 10.
Right.
And it's out in what I call East Laguna.
Okay.
And 2535 for anybody listening.
Right.
And it's open for whoever would like to come. And we've procured the outbound LCAD parking lot.
I was going to ask about parking next. I swear, that was my next question.
Yeah. So they've been kind enough to let us use that. It's their administration building. Right. Parking lot,
right.
And it's about a half a block from where the event is. But we're recommending everybody either Uber, Lyft, or park in that lot and walk out. Walk the half a block out to the spot, and it's going to be a fun event.
It sounds like fun.
I hope you'll be there.
I will. I intend to now. But promise me you'll have little cubes of stale cheese.
Okay.
Yeah. I can't wait, and I'll remind the audience beforehand.
Oh yeah, Adam, we appreciate you letting us get a little word out there.
Oh, of course. So you're obviously I just got my my voter guide. Have you gotten your voter guide?
I haven't got mine yet.
All right. Yeah. So if you peruse through it, everything in there we could possibly ask to be informed about. Are you finding as you talk to people that they're not as informed as they should be and that they're getting their information from just their phones and social media?
Well, I think generally, when it comes to election cycles in general, like when it comes to, everybody might know a politician that they favor or whatever, from a very superficial level, they just go, "Oh, I like so and so, and so I'm going to vote for them." And then, when you get down to propositions, and you get down to judges, and you get down to school board stuff, and it's like it falls off the cliff for most people, So, there are folks obviously who get down in the weeds with the minutia of our.
Which is really what we should all do.
As citizens, we should be more informed,
right,
for sure.
Right. I find it fascinating that we're 35 days out, and I was telling the audience here a little earlier this morning, we're 35 days out. I was at the Rotary Club car show yesterday.
Oh, yeah.
And I was fascinated not just by one or two people, but many people that hadn't even thought of examining who's running for council yet or any of the propositions or ballot measures. And I was like, Really?
Yeah. Well, yeah, no, it's interesting. And I think people, you know, when it comes down to maybe the last week, they'll go, oh, I should probably look at that.
It's like cramming, right? Yeah, like cramming for an exam in school is basically what it is.
And it's interesting because, you know, in our community being small, you know, 23,000 people, you know, I think most people are still kind of focused on their life. And, you know, it's the local issues are, you know, unless you're passionate about some of them, most people don't really get down and really understand the issues, the complexities, or the potential outcomes of what that might mean for the community. You know, so it's interesting. So, you know, I mean, I obviously I'm a little more involved than most. So as far as our local election cycle, you know, I kind of know where I stand on things and the ballot measures and all those things.
Right. So, and unapologetically so. So much so that your sign got vandalized at your house. You know?
I'm definitely a no on cue guy, you know. So
And that sign was vandalized a few weeks back?
Yeah. One of the things I keep in mind with everything locally is that we all need to maintain a little sense of humor, right?
Right.
I mean, people here tend to feel like our local issues are like life and death, you know? And I'm like, you know, look out beyond the bubble and see what really is serious out there. And so let's disagree on stuff. Let's have those conversations, but let's also maintain a little bit of a sense of humor about it too, because it can be kind of funny when people get so off the rails on stuff that they don't see the, you know, that it's not going to do them in if it doesn't go their way, you know. So
since you're not running for anything, what are your important issues here? If I was to ask you here in Laguna Beach specifically, what's important to you? What is it? What are the first things that our council should be considering? Our city should be considering?
Well, I always believe that, you know, there are the big things, which are usually not the glamorous fun things, right? So I feel like those always seem to get kicked down the road a little bit, you know, and then we do things like, oh, you can't use plastic straws, you know, like we're environmental people, you know, no plastic straws, no smoking in public, you know, those kind of things. And they're sort of the feel good issues, you know, and they're important. I'm not trying to diminish those things. But then, you know, you get down to like infrastructure and parking issues and traffic flow and development issues and things that are big.
Right.
And they're hard, you know, because they're complex. There's always two sides to those coins. And there's also, you know, a huge amount of misinformation that floats around. And that's the part that bothers me. And that's where I push back on. You know, I don't mind open, you know, discussions based on real facts.
Right.
But when people just start making stuff up or they go on and on about, well, if we don't do this, look what's going to happen. We're going to turn into Dana Point or Huntington Beach and all that. And those arguments to me are just fear mongering because it's so not the reality of what's happening.
Right.
I don't care if you don't like anybody on city council, but there isn't anybody on city council right now or the planning commission or DRB or any other of the groups that are involved in the city that want Laguna Beach to be Dana Point, Newport, or Huntington Beach. That's just a non-starter for me. And so when I hear people express, you know, that, well, if we don't elect the right people or we don't pass a certain measure, you know, the next thing you know, we're going to have high rises on Main Beach and block-long, you know, residential complexes all over town. It's just nonsense. And I just wish people would stop saying that because it's not reality.
Right. There was an episode of The Simpsons where Mr. Burns was able to block the sun.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, it's that kind of fear-mongering. I hear you.
So, you know, the big issues to me are the biggest one, I think, is parking. It's always going to be an issue because every project is connected to parking, whether it's a residential project or an ADU project. A commercial project, parking, you know, Laguna wasn't built for the future where there was tons of cars and we needed all this parking. So that's a big issue to me. And I, you know, trying to solve that is a very difficult thing because it requires political will, but it also requires funding, you know. Right. So it's a tough thing, and you know, you bring that up at any meeting, and you're going to have people going out of their minds over it, right. You know. So and you know, there's obviously a lot of a variety of viewpoints on that, and I think you know, we got to think about the future, you know, and it's we can't be always looking in the rearview mirror about, you know, well, Laguna was so great in the 60s and 70s. Well, yeah, I was here, you know. I know what it looked like, you know, and how it felt.
Right.
And you know, we're 40 or 50 years past that now, right. and I think the
Beatles were good in the 60s and 70s, but they're gone now.
Yeah. and I think we can't idealize that time, like, right. How can we bring Laguna back to that time? We're way past that, you know. And so we need to deal with the issues of today and the issues of 5, 10, 15 years from now. If it, you know, we got to have that kind of vision and really try to solve, you know, these bigger problems now and not keep kicking them down the road, because it's just going to get worse and worse and worse.
All right. Love these moments, man. Yeah. So what's the rest of your day look like? Now that you're awake, now that you're up and about?
Well, I've got a bunch of, you know, I'm an old school post-it note guy, so okay. I got to go through my notes on my desk and you know, I've got rent to pay, I've got bills to pay, like right. everybody else, and right. I've got a bunch of other things I got to follow up on, including trying to get some PR on the sculpture, you know, and get that out right. into the world. And I've got a lot of work to get done for the event we've got on the 8th of October at 2535 Laguna Canyon Road. So, right.
So you're still in the planning of your stages, or is there any last minute stuff you're?
It's mainly, you know, cleaning the complex up, right. And you know, I've got to reorganize one of my studio spaces, because that's going to be the stage for the bands.
Right.
And so it's just a lot of those details that go into making the event.
You got to buy toothpicks for the cubes of cheese.
Yeah. I've got to get the surplus government cheese out. And, So it's just a lot of that, and I've sort of dedicated this week towards that, and I've got a painting I'm working on that it's a environmentally themed painting, so I want to see if I can kind of put the finishing touches on that, so it'll be available to view.
I'd love to see it.
Yeah. So
I'd love to see it. That's this coming Saturday. The time?
It's 4 to 10 o'clock at night.
All right.
Yeah.
So. All right. And the address once again?
It's 2535 Laguna Canyon Road. So it's just past the art school and just before the Big Ben, right next to Tomo Tow Yard.
Right. And you're going to pass it just a little bit and then park in the lot at LCAT and then walk back a little bit if you're heading out of town.
Actually, you'll park in the lot that's before ours. It's across from the main campus. It's where the administration building is.
All right. Yeah, I'm glad I got that right.
Yeah.
I'd have been looking for it everywhere. Hey, where the hell
yeah,
am I?
Yeah, so it's a, you know, it's a half a block of a walk, but I think everybody can manage that.
All right. George Dubin, as always, thank you for coming in, man. Yeah. The door's wide open for you all the time.
All right. Well, thanks very much, Ed.
Thanks, George. 8:35 the time.